This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
The reason I'm prepared for this position is because I've been preparing for this all my life.
Our goal is to compete and really put a fun team on the court that really gets after it.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
We're very talented. I mean, when we go out there and compete at a high level and give a lot of effort, we can be a good team.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The Bearded One is returning to Houston, and there are going to be people on both sides of the aisle feeling some kind of way about it. What is up? And welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and partner at Apollo Media, all Houston, all original. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, as well as at Apollo H-O-U. And joining us today is the former microphone mastodon himself, Houston native and host of the Noble and Roosh show on ballislife.com, Mr. Roosh Williams. What's up, Roosh? How's it going, man?
Man, I'm chilling. You also forgot to add former Rockets champion.
But you're right. My bad. I apologize. How could I forget 94, 95? You know, the Rockets would not have been able to pull off the back-to-back titles without your contributions. I apologize for disrespecting you, sir.
Never forget, man. Anytime there was a loose ball, who was the first one on the ground?
Roosh Williams. Who was this guy right here? Absolutely.
No, but yeah, man, you know, thanks for having me on. I always love to stop by, and I figured this would be an appropriate time, you know?
Makes sense.
James Harden returns.
The return of James Harden is a big storyline, and who else to have on the show to discuss it with me than a former Rocket himself, right?
You know, we should dedicate an episode to the return of Rocket legend Jeff Green as well.
Absolutely. We'll have to do that. We'll have to do that down the line, because I think Harden takes this first return trip and then we can do Jeff Green at a later date. But I think it's also important. We got to make sure we get this out in the top of this episode, because this is actually going to be sort of like a two-part episode, because we're doing our first sit down here at Locked On Rockets. And we are shortly after this one going to be doing a back-to-back podcast over at your show, the Noble and Roosh show. And we're going to be, you know, expanding upon some of the thoughts and ideas here. And we'll also have Zach with us, and that's going to be incredible. So be sure, you know, if you're listening to this show, be sure to go check out Roosh's show right after this one. Fit that into your podcast rotation. Roosh and Zach interview so many amazing voices from across the NBA. They have had some amazing guest interviews on there. Roosh, why don't you tease? Why don't you plug yourself a little bit?
Yeah, man. Hey, thank you. Noble, it's the Noble and Roosh show. You'll probably have the best chance of finding it if you use the ampersand sign. Noble and Roosh show. Available anywhere you get your podcast, man. We've interviewed, you know, you name it, LeVar Ball, Andrew Bogut, Taylor Rooks, whoever, Kelly Aucoin. You know, we have actors on sometimes. Kelly Aucoin from the show Billions. So yeah, if you like basketball, specifically the NBA, check it out. We're going to expand on this discussion and do our best to not overlap. And with that said, since we are on Locked On Rockets, catering to the Rockets fan base, which both Jackson and I are diehard Rockets fans, I mean, this is one of the most polarizing topics that there is on Twitter among the fan base. James Harden, right? Did you draw the line in the sand and say, hey, we don't like you anymore? Or are you accepting and forgiving of how things went down? You know, how do you put it in perspective? And for me, I think we're both on the same team here. I'll let you speak for yourself. But for me, you know, if you followed me on Twitter and if you followed me specifically through the saga, the Harden saga, from the strip clubs to the this situation can't be fixed, thanks. Then you've seen my wide array of emotions and like the roller coaster that it was. But ultimately, where I've landed is, look, the man was a Rocket for damn near a decade. You know, he gave us the best Rockets memories of my adult life, period. Save for that 2009 season when Yao went down against the Lakers. That was an awesome series, even though the Rockets lost. But he's given us the best basketball memories of my adult life. He made the Rockets relevant again after decades of trying to find that juice, you know, after having banners and then just kind of being banished to irrelevance. He gave us his all, and the Rockets never really put the right team around him. And the one time they did, he tore through the league, got an MVP. And as we all know, we were a hamstring away from a title. And this whole analysis and everyone's opinions and the lens that we look at and view Harden through would likely be different had they won that title. So, look, man, and to top it all off, he's right. He was right. You know, he's now being, just look at the discourse. Look at the national media discourse revolving around James Harden now, today, March 2nd, right? Like, they are championing him. They're saying, oh man, this guy's playing a different style. They're saying, wow, I can watch this version of James Harden. And it's like, hey, doofus, he's got Kevin Durant. And when Kevin Durant's not playing, he's got Kyrie Irving. And even when those guys aren't playing, he's got shooters. He's never had a shooter like, he never had a single shooter like Joe Harris in Houston. And if you bring up Ben McLemore, then you don't know basketball and the differences and the nuances that feed into that comparison. And if you bring up Ryan Anderson, same thing, right? So like, he never had that, a guy that could do these types of things. He's just never had this type of team, and he's in the Eastern Conference. Okay. So he's in the easier conference. He's got the most talent in the league. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden at the top, tons of shooters surrounding them, athletes, guys like Jeff Green as like the ninth man. Good, probably going to be great team. So I can't blame him, man. I mean, I blame the people that fuel this discussion, that force a guy like James Harden to think, okay, I'm 31. This is my time. It's either going to happen now or never. And this roster in Houston, which has lost 12 games in a row, even though Christian Wood is out, which is valid, but even with John Wall and Victor Oladipo, you'd think they should be able to win a game, but they haven't. So those are my kind of unfiltered, ranted thoughts, man. Like, I mean, I hate the way it went down. It sucks watching, you know, Harden have all this success on a random ass franchise like the Brooklyn Nets that don't, frankly, don't deserve what they've been given, but that's a different discussion. And the way it went down sucked. You know, he dogged it on the court for 3 or 4 games. And like, there's never an excuse for that. But again, he's vindicated because he's having his way and like his vision is coming to fruition. So it's right. It's hard to argue with that. So again, I blame, you know, Shaq and Chuck and the people that perpetuate this stupid, stupid rings culture. I mean, even though Barkley and Malone get ridiculed for never winning a ring, they were still, at least to my young, youthful recollection, they were still talked about, and I mean, we're still talking about them in 2021 as the greatest to play their position. Obviously, Dirk Nowitzki and Duncan and KG came along, so you can have like a discussion about who's the greatest power forward of all time. That's not my point. My point is they didn't win rings, and they were still revered as absolute greats. You didn't see all this, oh, they choke, oh, this, that. You know, it was just Mike is too good. They lost to Mike. And so that conversation has been bastardized over the years and just turned into this polarizing binary, oh, you got a ring or you don't, because if you don't, then you suck, which is the worst way to look at basketball because you miss out on so many amazing basketball players, names I won't even list because we could have that discussion on a different day. And at the end of the day, you get James Harden, you get Anthony Davis, you get guys saying, look, if I don't go get that ring, they're just going to keep calling me a loser, even though I'm one of the best basketball players to ever play the goddamn game. So I don't blame them.
And how does that make you feel? I'll tell you what, man. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. I was just going to let you roll. I mean, and here's the great thing is, you know, sometimes when we're recording these podcasts, we do them over video. Sometimes we don't do them over video. It just kind of depends on, you know, everybody's internet connection, that kind of thing. So I'm sitting here watching Roosh and he's just, you know, he's flying through and you could tell that he's been wanting to get this off his chest. You know, he's been battling dumbasses all day on social media who are saying, you know, James Harden, his style of play is so great now. It's so wonderful to watch guys like, what's his name? Alan Hahn, you know, that dude. You know, saying that James Harden is so enjoyable to watch now, and it's so just mind-numbingly frustrating because we have experienced absolute peak greatness for, like you said, the better part of a decade, and now it's gone. And that's the part that's just, we were spoiled. We really were. We didn't realize how good we had it with James Harden, and now we are experiencing a team without a perpetual superstar, without a number one player in the NBA, because that's, you can make that argument this season that if you just take the Brooklyn Nets sample, you can argue James Harden has been the best player in the NBA this season, which is unbelievable. He has been easily top three, you know, any of the last seasons, pick one, top three, at minimum top five best player in the NBA over the last eight years with the Rockets. And now he's doing it with another team. And he's about to come back into town and face the team that he left with such an unceremonious exit, forcing his way out. And understandably, there's a lot of emotions there. I've worked through a great deal of them, and I've landed pretty much exactly where you're at, Roosh, is I still believe that he should have handled the exit better than he did. That was a nightmare. It was a mess. But I don't fault him for it. The organization had chances to put the right pieces around him. They had plenty of opportunities. They had ample time with James Harden in the middle of his prime. And the wrong moves were made. You can point the fingers at Tillman Fertitta, at Daryl Morey. You can point the fingers at James Harden himself for demanding the Russell Westbrook trade. All sorts of different things you can point blame. I don't think it's fair to shoulder any of it on any one person. I think everybody played their different roles in how this thing culminated and then ultimately, found its way to its breaking point. The situation's crazy. Thanks. But past all of that, I am pulling for James Harden to win a ring. And it took me some time to get there. You know, originally when it first happened, I was not jumping on the boat like, oh, I'm pulling for the Brooklyn Nets. I hope they win the East. I was kind of on the fence. At this point, I would like to see him win a ring so that he gets the respect that he deserves as a player, so that he gets to go down as one of those all-time greats, so that he doesn't go down as the next Chuck, as the next Karl Malone, as the next guy who didn't win a ring, who couldn't get over that hump. And for all the exact same reasons that you listed out, you know, it's going to be very vindicating to see that happen if he's able to pull it off this year, or if it doesn't happen this year, then potentially next year. Now we have a bunch of other areas that we got to get into. We've got some Twitter questions as well. Can you hold that thought, Roosh? Because we already went extra long. So I need your help here. We are going to circle back. This entire episode is dedicated to Harden because this is such a monumental occasion for him to be coming back, his first game back in Houston against the Rockets. And we're going to continue to talk about that after a quick message from our friends over at CBDMD. March is National Sleep Month, and as the official CBD of a good night's sleep, our good friends at CBDMD want to help you celebrate the right way. They've got dozens of options to help you relax, recharge, and enhance your nighttime routine, and there's nothing more calming than a nice hot bath. CBD bath salts fuse superior CBD with a mixture of Epsom, Dead Sea, and Himalayan salts to turn any bathtub into a luxury spa experience. Choose from lavender or eucalyptus scents or a soothing nighttime blend with melatonin and calming herbs. While CBD bath bombs provide a refreshing, relaxing bath experience by combining 100 milligrams of CBD with essential oils, Epsom salt, and calming natural scents to help you soak away the day. And to make it even easier to relax, regroup, and recharge, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off your next order when you use promo code MBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code MBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD products from CBDMD. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Did you know that you can get more of the sports news that you need in less time with our brand new Locked On Today podcast? Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news that you need in under 20 minutes. Seriously, Peter is amazing. Go subscribe to the show. Check it out. I would sincerely appreciate it. Now, chatting with none other than Roosh Willigan himself. Roosh, you had, I don't know if it was a counter or if you were going to build on that point that we just finished on. Where are you at?
So you mentioned, you were just talking about where you are now in terms of rooting for James Harden, the Brooklyn Net. And I was just going to expand. I'm in the same boat, but to be clear, because I know there are probably people listening that are on team, you know, I'm going to boo James Harden tomorrow night. Whatever. People that are angry at Harden still. I'm not emphatically like fist pumping when I watch the Nets, you know, I'm not like, yeah, yes, nailed it. Go Nets. God.
I need y'all to understand the facial expressions that went along with this were incredible. We should be, you know what? I'm going to take screen caps later. That's what I'm going to do.
So, I'm not emphatically rooting for the Nets. I'm just watching it almost in kind of, I don't know what the word is to describe the feeling, but it's that feeling. It's just I told you so. It's like, yeah, I knew it. Yeah. No, I was not crazy. Myself and Jackson and Ben Dubose and, you know, Rahat, everyone on Rockets Twitter, we weren't crazy. He's that good. He's as good as we said he was. And now we're watching it, you know, and that's just, I just, it's like, I reluctantly watch it just like, yeah, I knew he was this good. It's almost self-serving because the better he is, the better he plays, the more he achieves, the more vindicating it is for all of us who spent countless hours, you know, defending his basketball honor on Twitter.com.
Hours is underselling it, man. We've spent years defending. That's the problem. It's that monumental battle that we've faced for the better part of the last decade, where we've been defending this guy, saying no, he is incredible. We've watched him. We've experienced him on a nightly basis. We've been treated to that greatness, that level of excellence. The same thing that Rockets fans experienced with Hakeem Olajuwon throughout his career, right? Seeing that you know, you only get a generational player once every few generations, if you're lucky. And the Rockets have lucked into two of them. One, because they drafted him first overall. It was incredible, right? Changed the entire course of the franchise. You know, led the Rockets to back-to-back titles. I don't want to hear anything about, you know, the Michael Jordan debate. That version of the Rockets would have creamed the Bulls, all right? They couldn't hold a candle to him. So, like, that's my point, is they had James Harden because of the ineptitude of the Thunder franchise. And he was gift-wrapped and given to the Rockets. Daryl Morey brought him in and brought the Rockets 8 years of another generational, once-in-a-generation type talent. And we got to experience that for 8 years. And so now we're seeing it on another team that isn't, you know, that is a media darling, where they're getting fawned upon every other day. It's, oh, James Harden this. Oh, he's so wonderful to watch. It's so great. He's such a willing passer. It's, no shit, he's a willing passer. He's always been a willing passer, man.
Well,
so,
I mean,
so you have those moments where you freak out and you're like, come on.
I was saying all that to say, when the Nets win the title, because I think they will if they stay healthy, I think they will. And when they win the title, it's either them or the Lakers. It's going to be Nets Lakers unless somebody gets hurt. So let that be clear. Betting against LeBron James is never smart. But Kyrie, Harden, and KD, I think, are the team that can take them down. But when the Nets win the title, I'm not going to be sitting there emphatically, you know, fist pumping, crying tears of joy for James Harden. Again, I'm just going to be sitting there shaking my head like, I knew it. Yeah, I knew it. I'm happy for you. I'm rooting for you, but I can't take joy in it. It's like this internal feeling where it's kind of like my stomach is just smiling like, uh-huh, good job, Harden.
It's a little hollow almost because.
Yeah, I was going to say, I said my stomach is smiling. It's the inverse. My brain is smiling and my stomach is just like vomiting like, oh God, but it's the inverse of what?
Well, I wasn't going to say inverse. It's just, it's that moment where that should have been his ring in Houston. Like that's the problem is that should James Harden, his story, his legacy wasn't supposed to end this way. And it took so many bad turns, so many different breaks that just didn't go the Rockets' way. Hamstring, 0-27. CP3's, you know, repeated injury history, his down year, the fracturing of that relationship. Hell, you could point to even smaller stuff like missing Austin Rivers in game one in 2019 against the Warriors.
Not calling, you know, Klay Thompson's 10 fouls, stepping under Harden and losing that game by like, you know, a handful of points. Yeah. I mean,
so many different moments where you can pinpoint any single one of them and say, maybe if one or two of these moments break a little bit differently, then, you know, there's that renewed level of hope. Maybe if the Rockets don't flame out in the second round against Golden State, then, you know, they make it to the Western Conference Finals or the finals, even if they don't win it, then maybe he's got a renewed focus and he's willing to fix things with Paul. There's so much,
but you're right. But I would like to, unless you disagree, I say we stay away from all that because we have litigated those instances and events and potential events. I mean, so many times that I'm just numb to it at this point. And I think everyone's stuck in their stance, right? You got the CP3 was, you know, was not himself. So he should have been shipped. You got those people. You got the people like us that are saying, well, could have been salvaged, whatever, screw it all. The point is, I want to address two things. One, for the Allen Hans of the world, good Lord, for the people that think, oh, he's playing differently. He used to just jack up step backs and now he's not. This is the new James Harden. You never watched James Harden. More specifically, you never watched the Houston Rockets to understand why he was jacking those step backs, okay? Because he had to, right?
Can I read off this horrible headline from Allen Hahn just as you're making your point so that we can, because Dave Hardesty, Clutch Fans, put this out there and he's been dunking on Allen Hahn all day. It's been incredible. And, you know, Roosh has been tapping in, having, you know, having his, it's, it's, he's easy to dunk on. He's very dunkable at this point because he's an idiot. So, but this headline, it goes,
he's a dunkaroo.
But the Euro steps, the arm grabs and the head snaps and all the flailing, is that fun to watch? Is that entertaining? It sure is effective. He certainly is a stat compiler and an MVP candidate. But after watching two games this month, I can name at least 10 players, maybe more, who I'd rather pay money to watch than him. Him being James Harden. That was an article written by Alan Hahn. Just wow. Horrendous.
Highlight two games and then X out of that article ASAP. So for the Alan Hahns of the world, right? Who think that and who thought that and who now say, oh, it's the new James Harden. Dude, you didn't watch the Rockets. Okay, I saw someone comparing the current supporting cast on the Brooklyn Nets outside of Kyrie and KD as if you can make that qualification with a straight face. You can't. But let's entertain it. The Rockets supporting cast was better. And LeBron James Harden, bless his soul, I love that account. He put a screenshot of Trevor Ariza's Game 7 stats.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just ridiculous. So for the Alan Hahns of the world, you don't understand. Rockets fans had always been saying, he needs help. Everyone has been saying, yo, he needs help. And the singular one time that he really got it at the level he deserves to get it, you saw what happened until Chris Paul got hurt. And I'm convinced that those comments after they lost in the semis to the Warriors in Game 6 in 2019, I think that was targeted at CP3, either saying we need CP3 gone and someone else, or we need someone in addition to CP3 because he's not my number two anymore. And I say that to say the reason Harden went ballistic and bonkers and was jacking up step backs and being, you know, Mr. Everything in Houston.
Unguardable.
Because he had to be, and because he obviously felt like he had to be. James Harden, it's one of his strengths, and it's also simultaneously one of his weaknesses, is that he's so freaking good that he wants to be on the court with people that are as freaking good as him. And right now he's got two of them. Offensively, two of them. In Houston, he never had one. He had one in Chris Paul for one season that was at that level for 58 games of that season. And then he got hurt, right? So that's the reason, Alan Hahn. That's the reason anyone, any national media member figure, right? And real quick, the Nets fan base, no disrespect, but just like as an online contingent, it just pisses me off that they have been given James Harden because they have no presence. They have no swagger. They have no flavor. Like there's a couple of Nets writers that I follow that are fine, but I mean, they really don't hold a candle to like the Ali Khans and the Ecos and the R double Willigan Mastodons and the Duboses and the Gatlins and the Red 94s and the Clutch. You know, it's just like the ecosystem of members that they have and fans that they have. It's like, are y'all even a real franchise? Like, what are you? So that's that. But so that's addressing Alan Hahn. The second thing I want to address is the people that are, you know, in my mentions saying, nah, man, you know, you're really going to show Harden love. Like, nah, screw that. Okay. First of all, that tells me a lot about how you approach problems, right? Because like I said, Harden was right. The Rockets didn't have a team for him to contend. He was right. We're seeing it play out in real time. There's really no way to argue it unless you're just bitter. And I understand being bitter, because it's natural to be bitter. But again, I would say to those people, you don't just dump 8 years over a situation that played out the way it did, which we don't like. But the thing that people forget is we do not know what those conversations were. You ever heard of the telephone game? You're right. It's like this practice of how a message gets watered down and changed as it shifts from one person telling the next person, and the next person tells the next person how, you know, their iteration of that message. Like I could say, hey man, I bought a blue cat. And by the time you tell one person who tells five more people, they're going to be like, yo, did Roosh lease a green car?
You know, it's yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
It's like, so we don't know. We know Harden in the front office had talks, and what we see is Harden coming out hooping. Okay. He did put it all on the floor, and he was even going so far as to overact, which I could see right through, but at least he did it when he was coaching up the young players, coaching up Jayshon Tate after they had their fight in practice, you know, on the bench, being active, directing people, pointing this way and that, you know, being vocal, being a leader, right? Now, whether it was genuine or fake, it's obviously probably fake because he was just playing his part so that he could get shipped and move along. But why do you think he was doing that? Was he just unilaterally doing that because he woke up like, you know what, I'm going to be a team player, hop, step, and skip. Or is it probably because him and management or the front office were having discussions where he was saying, hey man, what's the deal? And they were saying, don't worry, we're working on it. And then he finally realized, I don't think they're working on it. And he said, he did what he had to do. We got the infamous quote and he got traded the next day, right? So like, if you zoom out and you detach your Rockets fandom from what happened, AKA unbias yourself, which is hard to do. We're humans. We get caught up in our own biases. I'm an attorney, so maybe I'm, you know, able to do this. Maybe I'm a douchebag. I don't know. But
I mean, you're definitely a douchebag, but like that's of course, just besides of course. The point.
I'm a ruche
bag. A ruche bag?
No. So, but the point is, it's awful. If you detach your Rockets bias, you see, like, yeah, it makes complete sense. He was playing his part. If you look at all the bits and pieces that we've tried to stitch together, he made this trade demand months before. The talks were there. Morey was gone. Front office knew the deal. They were trying to throw as many Hail Marys as they could. And I'm not even here to trash the front office. I'm not even here to do that. Shout out to my dog, Patty Fertitta. But they were trying to salvage something. And I'm glad that they tried because I didn't want to lose Harden. But they were trying to salvage something that was broken beyond repair. And Harden was playing ball, both figuratively and literally, until he decided, okay, I need to do what's best for me. And he did. And now look at how it's playing for him. It's working for him. How can you blame him? I cannot blame him. It sucks that we could never give him KD. It sucks that 2015-2016 year happened, because that was probably the time we were going to get KD, and history has changed forever if that happens. But it didn't, right? And so, like I said, how can you blame a man that got traded to a team with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Joe Harris, shooters like Joe Harris and Landry Shamet and all the other shooters they got, with his former head coach being the assistant coach? You know what I mean? Like, how can you blame the guy? You really want James Harden coaching up Jayshon Tate? You really think a guy who's 31, who's God tier at basketball, top five in the NBA, possibly top three and not three, you think that guy is going to spend his 31st year going on 32 coaching up David Nwaba and Jayshon Tate and trying to extract the best value out of Sterling Brown off the bench? You know, like, yeah, Christian Wood was there. Yeah, John Wall was there. And I was vehemently arguing that, like, yo, give it a chance. It can work. But is it really anything to compare to Kevin freaking Durant and Kyrie Irving? It's not. It's just objectively not. I wish it was. I truly wish it was, but it's not. So, I mean, at the end of the day, that's where I stand. I'm 31. I'm 3 months older than Harden, okay? I'm about to turn 32 in June. Harden turns 32 at the very end. I turned 32 at the beginning of June. He turns 32 at the end of August. James Harden is 5,000 times the athletic specimen that I am on his worst day. But my body's breaking down, dude. I can tell that, like, my years of being, like, respectable as, you know, just an average Joe playing basketball are pretty much gone or about to be gone. So he's like, I just take that mindset and I transfer it over to, okay, what if I was arguably the best basketball player in the world? How would I be viewing my time? Like, how does that clock ticking affect me? Oh, okay. I get it. I totally get it. As soon as I do that analysis, I'm like, I totally get it. Every season is a lost season. COVID could be a lost season. It could be a lost season with the Rockets, or it could be his championship season with KD and Kyrie in Brooklyn, right? Like, how do you balance the two, man? Just be unbiased. I love Houston. I'm from Houston. Rockets fan since I was born. Never not going to be one, for better or worse. Harden's a Rocket for life. What does he owe to the Rockets at this point? Really? He gave it his all. It's that he doesn't have this, like, invisible or inherent or immediate attachment to, you know, attach his career and that potentially being a sinking ship in and of itself to an actual sinking ship in the Houston Rockets right now.
I want to keep going down this path, this train of thought, but first I have a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Tell you what, I'm eyeing one of those protein bars I've got sitting over on my counter to my right of me right now, because the thing about Built Bar is they're not like traditional protein bars. They're not gritty. They're not chalky. They're delicious. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They come in so many awesome flavors. Again, I've got this specially made crispy one over here that they're trying to roll out. I've also tried their coconut brownie chunk. That one is really good. Then they've got, raspberry, German chocolate, peanut butter, cookies and cream. You name it, they probably have it. And again, these bars, they're so great. They're great for the health conscious person, whether you're trying to lose weight, maintain where you're at. They're low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. They are amazing for a keto diet, and you can check it out. Just go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON20. That's LOCKEDON20, and you'll get 20% off your very next order. So again, that's promo code LOCKEDON20 for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Quick message from our friends over at betonline.ag. Look, BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and NHL are all in full swing. And speaking of full swing, MLB is also right around the corner. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. You can get real-time, updated odds and props on almost anything that you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It is the best way to place your bets, and it's 100% free to sign up. So head over to the website and use promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. Again, that's a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Chatting with Roosh Williams of the Noble and Roosh Show, ballislife.com, wherever you get your podcasts, go check it out. So continuing down that train of thought that we were just on a moment ago, Roosh, there's a weirdness and an expectation, you know, and it's a double-edged sword, this sense of loyalty from players where, you know, fan bases expect this undying allegiance from the players. But at the same time, it's a business. And at the end of the day, I'm a big fan of a lot of the player empowerment that we have in today's NBA, where guys can take control of their careers, their destinies, and have the most power that they ever have had, you know, at this stage in the NBA's, time span, lifespan, whatever. And it's tough because you look at the situation with Harden, and that's where I do take a bit of an issue with some of the player, you know, empowerment stuff. He was under contract for 2 more years, the player option at the end. It's tough, you know, up until the Anthony Davis situation, we'd never seen something like that. A player asking out with 2 years left on his deal? What the hell? But you also can make the argument, this is not the same organization, right? Again, different owner, different coach, different general manager, completely revamped roster. There's so much different about this team. And all the while, he's got KD chirping in his ear, you know, come to Brooklyn. Come team up with me and Kyrie. And he's surveying this NBA landscape. He's got LeBron James in his conference now, Anthony Davis, LeBron James super team that he's got to somehow be able to beat. He thought that maybe, you know, that Hail Mary of bringing in Russell Westbrook, bringing in his buddy who is, you know, who is healthy, was a relative, not Iron Man the last couple seasons, you know, similar to himself, somebody that could maybe raise the ceiling of the team, you know, a little bit higher than what he thought CP3 was, you know, had left in the tank, whatever. He tried it. That was his Hail Mary. And that's been my stance, is that the Russ trade was his final Hail Mary. It's like, okay, well, KD went to Brooklyn. I can't go get us KD. I can't go. We missed out on getting Jimmy Butler last year to pair with me and CP. Who else can I get? All right, we can go get Russ. Like Russ is healthier than CP. He's younger than CP. Yes, he's got. I'm sure James Harden is too intelligent as a basketball player. He's too damn smart to not have realized that there were going to be some fit issues, that there was probably some question marks there. But in his mind, he was probably thinking, you know what? He raises the ceiling a little bit higher. Maybe he's all I need. Maybe he's what I need a little bit. You know, him plus me can get us, you know, through the West. And that was his attempt. And it didn't pan out. And maybe things play out differently if we don't get the COVID season. Maybe things play out a little bit differently if Russ doesn't, you know, hurt his quad. And again, you still point to all these things, all these what ifs across Harden's timeline in Houston. And that's what's so painful, is, you know, maybe a few things break a little bit differently and he's still a Rocket, but he's not. And he's playing for the Brooklyn Nets now, and that's something that we got to deal with every day. So when people jump on Twitter and they're like, why are you guys still tweeting about CP3 in 2017-18? It's because they were damn close, that's why. And it's because they were now that moment's gone.
It's because they were the best team in Houston Rockets history in the regular season. And had they won the title, they would have been the best team in Houston Rockets history.
Yeah.
And another thing to add to that, and Dream is my favorite player of all time, and pretty much every member of the 94 and 95 teams are all equally my favorite Rockets ever. So no disrespect to those teams. Love them forever. But had the Rockets finished that season with a title, I mean, it's objectively the best Rockets team in franchise history and one of the greatest teams ever. So, and to drive that point home, I agree with everything you said. I think Russ was his Hail Mary. I think he was just, you know, looking for some type of competitive edge that he thought was lost out on CP3. He thought, look, I just went through this. CP3, you know, was
he's not capable of
being my running mate. I saw it firsthand. I'm not trying to do this again unless we have additional help. So I mean, like us as fans and me thinking, and my thinking was right. I thought, man, Chris Paul didn't go out like that. He's going to bounce back. He's going to do something to revamp his career. He's not going down. He's not going to go out like that and let everyone say, oh, this is the worst contract in the NBA. This guy is like, you know, this untradeable thing you don't want on your team. So I knew he was going to have, you know, motivation and drive to get better. And then he got traded, so he had extra motivation. But yeah, you're right, right? So Paul George, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, right? Jimmy Butler, all these people forced their way out and got what they wanted. Jimmy Butler got to a finals. Kawhi got a ring, another one. Anthony Davis got a ring. Paul George,
playoff TBD. Pepe.
Playoff Pepe. he got what he wanted. He went to LA, teamed up with Kawhi. And to drive all of that home, as good as that team was in 2018, they don't get the respect they deserve, even now. So if you're James Harden, you're thinking, man, we just took allegedly, arguably, the greatest team of all time to the distance, and we didn't even have Chris Paul for almost 33% of the series, and we took them the distance and still got screwed and could have possibly won it had we still not gotten screwed by Scott Foster. And no one puts respect on my name or the name of the Rockets as a result of that. It actually miraculously amplified the choker image of Harden. It somehow, playing that team, made him even more of a choker. Losing to that team without CP3 made him even more of a choker.
Which goes back to your point that you had made earlier about, you know, when in the 90s with, you know, Barkley and Shaq and the guys that had lost repeatedly to the Bulls, right? At no point was it ever, you know, they're chokers, they couldn't get the job. It was MJ's too good. You can't beat MJ. Like, that was the argument. And people were content with that argument because MJ was so damn good. But then it became this convoluted mess of, you know, the rings culture and all of this stuff. Now, and then somehow, instead, the argument should have been the Golden State Warriors were a historically great team. And Harden was outclassed by himself as the one all-star, the one superstar on a team who lost his one running mate that he did have. And he was up against four all-stars, you know, four all-time greats. And that's not ever the argument. The argument is, oh, LOL, 0-27. LOL, he, you know, shoot less threes. You know, LOL, CP3, you know. The worst one is when they say, you know, oh, well, they didn't have Iguodala. I lose my shit on that one every single time. You know, when people try to equate CP3 to Iguodala, and then we have to bring up Luke and Bamute after that. It's just,
and then
a nightmare.
And then they laugh you off, and it's like, oh, that's right. You didn't watch any of the games because you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yep.
I had a moment that drove this home. Oh, I did a pod with Sam Esfandiari, who is a leading member of Warriors Twitter. He does the Light Years podcast. He is very closely connected with Warriors world, so a lot of Rockets fans probably hate him. I used to strongly dislike him because of his tweets until we actually started talking. And he's a pretty cool dude, just a normal guy. So got love for Sam. Shout out to Sam. But I did a podcast with Sam talking about the Warriors. And at the end of it, we dove deep into that series, Rockets Warriors 2018 series, because I just wanted to have a conversation with the Warriors fan, get their perspective on like, yo, like, how did that team make you feel? And it honestly, I was expecting him to show love and say, man, that team was really good. And, you know, they're the one team that Warriors fans really like, that really shook Warriors fans. And that's not what I got. What I got was Warriors fans basically felt the whole time, why aren't we beating these guys? We should be beating these guys. A lot of them thought the Iguodala thing was big as well, but their sentiment was always just, it's kind of like you got like a fly just buzzing around and you're like, why can't I kill this freaking thing? You know, the thing that shakes Warriors fans is LeBron James, I found out. So beating LeBron James, even though they dominated the Cavs once they got KD, beating LeBron James was like their prize. You know, it was their thing. Even facing LeBron James for Warriors fans was their like, God, man, I don't know about this. I'm nervous. It was never those Rockets, right? And so his takeaway was basically, hey, man, yeah, it was you know, great series. Like, y'all really grinded it out. It didn't make sense to any Warriors fans, but we won. So, you know, whatever. And that's it. It's kind of a footnote. So if you're James Harden, and like the greatest achievement of your career, and arguably the greatest achievement of anyone's career that hasn't won a ring, right? Taking one of the greatest teams of all time to seven almost on your own. And you still get no love. And like I said, you are actually made fun of more as a bigger choker. Think about that, and think about what that does to your psyche. Now, to be clear, you know, when we're saying the conversation was MJ is too good, it wasn't these guys choke. I don't remember. Like I don't have those old SportsCenter clips. I forget what media coverage was like. So maybe we're wrong. But my recollection is that it was MJ is too good and not, oh man, you know, Alonzo Mourning and the Heat just choked again in the Eastern Conference Finals. Pat Ewing, I think Pat Ewing and the Knicks got a lot of flack for it. But yeah. So I mean just put that in perspective. You do something no one has done. Literally no other team did. LeBron James, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving couldn't even do half of it. Okay. Now I know the Rockets won 3 games and there's no way you can win 1.5 games, but they won 1 game in 2 finals, right? When they were all healthy.
Yeah. I mean, I remember crunching the numbers and, you know, you look at the Kevin Durant era Warriors, and I remember our biggest argument was the Rockets winning 3 games against them and falling just short. And then the fact that everybody else in the NBA had only won 3 games combined against the Kevin Durant-led Warriors, which was unbelievably crazy. So, you know, just going through all of that, I mean, we've obviously, hopefully this has served as somewhat of a therapy session almost and been, you know, pretty therapeutic for Rockets fans who are at least on our side of the aisle, and hopefully those who will, you know, circle back to get to this point eventually working through emotions.
You want to get to some of those tweets?
We could save them for the other show.
Let's do a couple.
Okay. All right. Let's do a couple. I'm going to pull this
one. Let's do a couple if they aren't. Zach is my trade guy. Zach knows trades.
Well, then let's go with this one because I know this is one that we can hammer out. How many MVPs do you think Harden would have won if the media respected him like they do today? He should have at least 2, given you take away the Greek Freak's fraud in 2019. But would he have stolen one from Steph or Russ? And that is from @MartinRowe_96.
I think if they respected him like they should, I think 2, maybe 3. I mean, look, the fan in me says 3. Everyone's going to call me a homer for picking Harden over Steph in 2015. I still think that's one of the most impressive runs that I've seen in modern basketball. Because if I ask a non-Rockets fan to name a player on that team that isn't James Harden, they're going to say Dwight Howard and Trevor Ariza, and they're not going to know anybody else. So, and they won 56 games, 2 seed, went to the Western Conference Finals. And I'm pretty sure Harden's numbers were like not astronomically, but materially better than Steph that season. Let's prove that. Steph, 24 points, 7.5 assists, 23.8 points, 7.7 assists, shot 91% from free throw, which is great. Great percentages, of course. So 24 and 7.5. And James Harden that season. And of course, they got the 1 seed, so that goes without saying. And then James Harden that season, averaged 27.5 points and 7 assists. 2 steals, too. So I don't know. Better stats, carried a much larger load. Had a much worse supporting cast. I think he could have won that one. I think he could have won the one. He should have won the one over Russ and the one he got. That would be 3. I can entertain an argument for Harden winning it over Giannis, although I've said on record that I'm okay with Giannis winning that. And I still am, because objectively they had the number 1 seed. I don't remember how many games they won, but I think it was 60 something, which is a lot. Giannis's numbers were crazy. So I have no problem. Like if James Harden was averaging those numbers and the Rockets won 60 something games, we're number 1 in the West, we'd be saying Harden MVP, no question. So I'm okay with him not winning that, but definitely the one over Russ, bar none. Absolutely. No 6 seed player should ever win the MVP based on history. And if we're going to start doing that, then it's going to turn into a number. It's going to turn into an award based on numbers, which is a slippery slope. So the one he got, the one over Russ, the one over Curry in 15, 2 or 3.
I'm pretty much exactly where you're at. I mean, and that's the hard part. We talked about separating your biases earlier, and you know, you as a litigator, you know, are able to do that. And then, you know,
I'm actually not a litigator. I'm a transactional guy. I do
transactional
deals.
Guy. I apologize. Contracts. You have a background in law, damn it. And litigator sounds like a fancy term, so let me sound smart, asshole. Anyways, so, but in a similar approach, my background is in journalism. And even though I don't actively practice, you know, true blue journalism anymore, that's what my background's in. That's what my education's in. So I try at times to separate the Rockets fan in me and take a, you know, kind of like an out of body experience, step outside of my usual thought processes and figure out how others would be feeling about certain situations. And I definitely still bleed homerist at more often than not. But being able to do that and asking that of other fans is the dilemma, because some people just can't separate their biases. But when you can, you start to be able to appreciate things in a different light. And that gives you some more, enlightened opinions about certain dynamics, whether it be NBA related, whether it be in life at large, right? And so that's an area that, you know, it sounds like you've had experience in and obviously have been trained in, taught in, myself as well, many others. So, you know, I say all that to, you know, circle it back to just, this has been a wild situation, a crazy situation, if you will. got to throw out the quote. Thanks. But we're going to continue this conversation rolling because we've got our second show over at the Noble and Roos show, and we want to continue this discussion about the Rockets and Harden and that dynamic. But we're going to breach into some other topics as well, some transactional stuff, probably talking about the, you know, after effects of the trade, the picks, all those kinds of things. But hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. Hopefully it's been therapeutic to you in a sense. Roos, go ahead and let everybody know where to track you down at.
Yeah, R-O-O-S-H rhymes with swoosh, except it's Roos Williams. Twitter. I'm really only active on Twitter. You can follow me on Instagram, but I may not accept your request because I try to be private, at least to the extent that I can. And then the Noble and Roos show, anywhere you get your podcasts. Like I said, man, we have a bunch of cool guests and we probably got some cool ones coming. So make sure you tune in. Thank you, sir. Had fun. Thank you for letting me vent.
Absolutely. No, it's a therapy session. That's what this has turned into. We do therapy Rocket sessions here, and they tend to turn out pretty well. So hopefully this was a cathartic experience for you listening to this podcast. And as always, if you're listening to this podcast, thank you so much for tuning in. As always, appreciate you listening. But that is going to do it for today's show. Look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.
I'm going to plug one thing just for fun. Therapy on Red Nation. Acronym, TORN. All right.
Oh, my God, you're the worst. All right. That's going to do it. Thanks for listening.